From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Wednesday, May 10th, 2017. And on this day, a longtime Naples resident will be deported to his native Guatemala tomorrow. And U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price brings his opioid listening tour to Maine. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by the Law Offices of Joe Bornstein, dedicated to serving injured and disabled Mainers from Kittery to Caribou. JoeBornstein.com. And by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Masters of Policy Planning and Management, preparing students to be a force for positive change in their communities.
U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price has been visiting states across the country to hear about their efforts to combat the opiate crisis. Here in Maine, Price was greeted by protesters, met with a group of healthcare providers, and spoke at a news conference with Governor Paul LePage and top Trump advisor Kellyanne Conway. Mel Leary has our story.
Price and Conway were met with chanting protesters as they went into a meeting in the governor's cabinet room with more than a dozen healthcare providers, state officials, and others. Conway says the purpose of the tour is to hear about how states are handling the opioid crisis, which she says is a top priority of the Trump administration.
The president has made combating drug addiction in this opioid crisis, where no demographic has been untouched and no state left spared. We know that he has made this a centerpiece of his administration.
The meeting was closed to reporters, but at his news conference afterward, Price said he was impressed by some of the approaches that Maine is taking in response to the problem. He cited something he heard in the meeting from Maine Chief Justice Lee Sofley.
What she said was that we need to answer the question, how do you assess? What's the appropriate assessment for individuals who are addicted to determine what's the best treatment path for them? Because what's right for one person isn't necessarily what's right for another.
Price says Maine is receiving $2 million to help fight the crisis in Maine as part of a $485 million initiative announced last month. He says he strongly supports the use of Narcan and other drugs that reverse the effects of an overdose because they save lives. Price deferred to Governor LePage when asked about LePage's legislation that would ask people who are given Narcan for multiple overdoses to start paying for those doses.
I have also said in my bill that the first shot of naloxone and Narcan is free. I have no problem. But if they repeat offenders like the 13, 14, and 15 shots, they have to have skin in the game.
But the Trump administration's critics go beyond the chanting protesters outside the cabinet room. First District Democratic Congresswoman Shelley Pingree called the government's response woefully inadequate to address the increasing crisis facing the country.
I'm deeply troubled with how the Trump administration has proposed slashing federal programs that offer assistance for both the law enforcement and public health aspects of this crisis.
And in a speech on the floor of the Senate, Maine Independent Senator Angus King sharply criticized the administration's proposal to nearly eliminate the decades-old Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Here we are in the midst of the most serious drug crisis in the history of this country, and the administration is talking about gutting the very office that's supposed to lead the fight. It's as if in the middle of World War II, we had abolished the Department of Defense.
King says Maine reported more than one drug overdose death per day last year, and that some other states are being hit just as hard. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
A longtime Naples resident who was detained by immigration agents last month will be deported to his native Guatemala tomorrow. That's according to his wife, who says she'll continue to press for his freedom and his eventual admittance back to the states. Fred Bever has our story.
Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents detained Otto Morales Caballeros last month as part of President Trump's stiffened enforcement of immigration law. That was on a deportation order dating back to 2010, according to immigration authorities. His wife, Sandra Scribner Merlim, says he has been moved at least four times to various detention facilities and is now in Louisiana, where he awaits deportation on a flight to Guatemala Thursday.
This should not be happening here in the greatest melting pot in the world, in such a heartwarming state as Maine. My heart is breaking, not just for my husband, but for all the families currently losing loved ones to these awful ICE raids. These are raids on the American way.
Morales Caballeros fled Guatemala to the U.S. more than 20 years ago when he was a teenager, according to his wife, at a time when civil war was raging and drug cartels were on the rise in his homeland. He eventually settled in Naples, worked for a Saco lobster shipping company, paid taxes, and in 2015 married Merlin. And she says that in 2013, Morales Caballeros signed a confession admitting that he had participated in a scheme to falsify a Social Security number. He later cooperated with authorities on that issue, she says, but the confession to a felony appears to have played a role in his expected deportation. His key mistake, she says, was not to seek asylum when he first arrived.
Most of them don't. They're afraid, and especially him, being a kid, he's going to go with whatever advice he's given. And his advice was stay low, work under the table, don't get in any trouble, and stay in obscurity like most of them do.
Merlin says if her husband is deported, her next moves will be to try to visit him in Guatemala and to seek waivers to allow him to be legally readmitted to the U.S. If that fails, seeking asylum in Canada may be her husband's next option. Merlin adds, however, that she believes the fight to get her husband back to the U.S. legally is winnable. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
Yesterday, we reported on the owner of a 23,000-acre plot of land on the Quebec border with Maine, who's seeking $6 million for a conservation easement. Today, we return to the property known as Big Six, which accounts for up to a quarter of Maine's annual maple syrup production, but is worked almost exclusively by Canadians. In the second part of a two-part report, Steve Missler looks at what attracts those Canadian producers and why so little of the syrup they process is sold in Maine.
The maple sugar season lasts longer at Big Six than most other places in Maine, but it's over now. Most of the taps are pulled from the trees, although the maze of tap lines will remain in place until next season. Inside a massive warehouse deep in the forest, Christian Poirier and Martin Lelivier are breaking down and cleaning the equipment. Together, Poirier and Lelivier lease more than 100,000 taps from Paul Fortin, the landowner seeking state and federal subsidies to keep him from cutting the prized plantation of maple trees here for hardwood lumber. Like all of the maple sugar producers in Big Six, Poirier and Lelivier live in Quebec. They have green cards that allow them to work in the U.S. The same goes for the workers they hire during peak sugaring season.
We can't hire Americans. They can't come.
Rayum Rodrigue has been leasing taps here for nearly 30 years. He lives in Saint-Justine, a small town of about 1,800 people across the border in Quebec. It's about 35 minutes away from here, much closer and more accessible to Big Six than most anyone living in Maine.
They can't come by Canada, because they don't have a passport and all, and they can't cross the border every day. And they can't come through the wood. It's about 2 hours and a half to come here from Jackman. And it's not a good road.
Access is a problem that's not just confined to Big Six. It's an issue throughout the large maple plantations scattered along the Maine-Canada border. It was cited as an issue in a report by the Maple Syrup Task Force commissioned by the legislature 6 years ago. But there are other reasons that draw Canadian syrup producers to work in the U.S. Kathy Hopkins is a maple syrup analyst with the University of Maine Cooperative Extension, who served on the task force. She says it's a livelihood that's passed from generation to generation, along with access to the trees.
If historically they've been producing syrup in Maine, it's kind of hard for them to suddenly acquire a sugar bush in Quebec.
And there's another big factor. It's called the Federation of Quebec Maple Syrup Producers. The Federation has been likened to the Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries, or OPEC. It's also been described as a cartel. The Federation sets prices and quotas for producers. Those who produce more than their quota have to put the syrup in reserve. And if they don't, the Federation can confiscate it. That's not a problem in Maine, says Martin Lelivier, a producer at Big Six.
Here, you can't touch us.
And while Canadian producers working in Maine are untouchable by the Federation, they also benefit from its policies. Canada accounts for over 80% of the world's syrup production, and a lot of that comes from Quebec and the Federation. Studies show that the Federation keeps syrup prices high and mostly stable, which means Canadian producers working in Maine reap the benefits of its market influence without suffering sales quotas, tap limits, or enforcement measures. But what's in it for Maine? Kathy Hopkins from the University of Maine Cooperative Extension says the Canadian workers help meet demand from Maine retailers.
Yes, they may be Canadian, but they're making Maine syrup. So if the producers in the southern part of the state couldn't buy in syrup that's made in Maine, they would have a harder time satisfying their market.
It's true that some of the syrup produced along the border does make its way to Maine retailers and is sold as a product of Maine. But exactly how much is anyone's guess? The state doesn't track it. But there is a general consensus that most of the syrup at Big Six is shipped out of Maine in bulk and sold to wholesalers like Bascom Maple Farms in New Hampshire or Butternut Mountain Farm in Vermont. It's then packaged and resold to major retailers, including grocery chains.
So did you already sell most of your syrup? Is it gone, or is it some still here?
I'm a sailor, Bascom.
I sold it to Bascom, Christian Poirier says. Rium Rodrigue, meanwhile, has loaded a large shipping container filled with 55-gallon drums. It's headed for Vermont. In its report to the legislature, the Maple Sugar Task Force set a goal of establishing a Maine brand for syrup. The state has made limited progress on that front, and it's unclear whether the proposed conservation easement for Big Six, a total of $6 million, would move the effort forward. But J.T. Horn of the Trust for Public Land, which is helping landowner Paul Fortin apply for the easement funding, says it would benefit the state of Maine.
Would it be better if it was U.S. workers? Absolutely, I would love that, but it is what it is, and the alternative is that we could see the maple production in Maine be cut by 20 or 25%.
Some privately question whether the taxpayer subsidy for Big Six is worth it. But so far, public skeptics of the deal are a lot like U.S. workers in the state's most productive sugar bushes. Few and far between. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
And you can find part one of Steve Missler's story and more at mainepublic.org. You can also find more of today's Maine news. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Wednesday, May 10th, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.